Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Dr. Park by Clara Ann Simons. Narrated by Crystal Hammond. Forward. Yesterday, they let me know you died. Your heart had finally given out. It had endured so much, and it couldn't take it anymore. Death's embrace lulled you to sleep, and you probably didn't even realize it. To be honest, I'm not sure if I would have liked waking up next to you, only to find you lifeless, sleeping forever. Even so, I am sad for not having been by your side. I am so sorry that you will miss our daughter's graduation ceremony. You know she adores you, and that you are the mirror she looks in. She will be a great surgeon, just like you. Thank you for being the best mother for her, and the best wife to me. I hope you're right, and there is another life after this one, so that we'll meet again. On that day, I'll tell you that you've been everything to me. The most important person in my life. The woman I've shared every day with for 30 years. My soulmate. Now, I don't know how to go on without you. Or even if I want to. I often suggest that my patients write a letter to the person who has died. You taught me that in medical school. This is my letter to you. It all started 30 years ago. Chapter 1. Los Angeles. 30 years earlier. With a loud thump on the steering wheel, I curse my bad luck as I run a red light to turn left onto Burbank Boulevard. I'm already quite late, and I don't want to be stopped by the police along the way. That would only delay me even more. I had planned to leave 10 minutes earlier. Still, as usual, I got sidetracked. And now I'm standing in the typical rush hour traffic jam in this city. I sigh deeply and lean over to grab the thermos resting in the cup holder to my right. As I unscrew the cap, my black, swirly coffee materializes out of the steam rising from the center of the plastic container. This morning, I need an overdose of caffeine like the very air I breathe. As a doctor, I have a good idea of how important it is to get enough sleep before working marathon days. Still, tonight has been different. A continuous doze, tossing and turning, unable to fall asleep. I haven't slept in my own bed for weeks. Lately, I've been spending every night with Martina. Her place in Woodland Hills is much closer to the hospital than mine in Canoga Park. However, now that we are no longer together, it doesn't make sense for me to keep staying at her apartment. Had we ever really been together? I don't know. Beyond occasional sex or friendship, I don't think I ever felt anything for her. In the eyes of others, we were almost the perfect couple. But there was no spark between us. I guess it kept my mother quiet, and that was enough. In any case, returning to sleep in my own house is strange to me. I'll have to get used to it again. I arrive at the hospital a little over 20 minutes late, and I am surprised to see the nurses running around, frantically rearranging the entire operation planning board. Usually our work pace is insane, even on a typical day, but today seems a bit excessive. I grab Gabby as she storms past me and ask, "Did something happen?" Gabriella is the head nurse in the surgery ward, and one of my best friends since I transferred from Boston a little over 6 months ago. I wanted to challenge myself at a smaller hospital, a place where I could take on more responsibility early on to advance my career.
"Good morning. You know you're late, right?"
she complains.
"There's a surgical procedure scheduled for you in 1 hour. It's in operating room 4. It's simple. Joe will give you all the details. Please don't take too long because you'll have to do several this morning,"
Gabby says without even looking up from her tablet.
"Is something wrong?"
I press as I observe her strange attitude.
"Phil has resigned,"
Gabby replies without pausing.
I stammer, trying to process what she just said.
"What?" I ask, confused, but my mind can't grasp it. Phil is the head of my department and the person who signed me up to work in this hospital. I am especially fond of him because he has always trusted me, even though I have less experience than other surgeons at the center. When I was in Boston, I had the opportunity to work with some of the best surgeons in the world, but I was simply an assistant more than an actual surgeon. At this small hospital in Los Angeles, Phil has allowed me to perform much more complicated surgeries than at my previous hospital. As a result, I've gained valuable experience and gotten more confident in my abilities.
"Phil says he'd like to talk to you. He's in his office,"
Gabriella adds.
"And hurry up, for God's sake. Don't be late for surgery, please. I'll see you at noon in the cafeteria. Now I must redo the whole schedule, and I'm too stressed to talk."
With a long puff, I instinctively check the time on my watch before checking in with our chief surgeon. I stride over to his office, turning right to get there, and then I walk in without bothering to knock.
"What is it, Phil?"
I asked, with my heart racing. He pauses for a moment, lifts his eyes to me, and I can see that he is sad and worried. The bags under his eyes are evidence that he didn't sleep last night, and deep creases form on his face. He looks desperate. It's as if 10 years have been dumped on him all at once.
"It's Kat, my wife,"
Phil explains as I close the door to his office for privacy.
"Yesterday, the doctors confirmed the diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease. It's quite advanced,"
he adds in a softer voice than before. I breathe out slowly and bite my lower lip. Phil cares deeply for his wife. It must have been a hard blow for him.
"It should have been obvious to me,"
my boss complains, as he carefully puts one of his diplomas in a cardboard box he has placed on his desk.
"I'm a doctor, for God's sake."
I approach him by taking small, tentative steps as I caress his right arm. I want to urge him not to blame himself, but I'm not quite sure what to say. I've always had a hard time expressing my emotions. I was never good with feelings, and when I'm thrown into situations like this, I often don't know what to say.
"Her memory problems were getting worse, and she had started forgetting simple things like feeding our cat, Luna. Recently, she had trouble remembering when I proposed to her in New York City, on the rooftop of one of the Twin Towers, years before they had been destroyed. She couldn't even remember the events of 9/11.
Phil says.
"Last week, when we watched emergency doctors on TV, she couldn't follow the plot."
He looks away, so I can't see his watery eyes. To be fair, I'm having a hard time following the plot of that series, too, I blurt out, trying to cool down the mood, and immediately realizing that this is not the right time. At least Phil doesn't seem to have even heard me and continues talking.
"Sometimes Kat would leave the dishes half done, with the faucet running. She would forget to take her heart medication. Over the last few months, she was having trouble doing basic calculations like adding up how much money was needed for the shopping basket or keeping track of where she was on her way home. Damn, I didn't think anything of it. Always immersed in my work. I blamed the distraction on her. I should have been more present. I'll never forgive myself.
Phil trembles and sighs deeply between each word, brushing away a tear rolling down his cheek with his index finger. You can't blame yourself, Phil. That's the thing about our profession. We practically live in the hospital. Still, in return, we save lives, I say, repeating the exact phrase I tell myself almost every day like a mantra.
I have given everything to this hospital, Laura,
the chief surgeon admits, shaking his head.
My work was my whole life, and I neglected my wife. Now I must focus on Kat. I must give her all my attention while her head is still functioning. I owe it to my wife.
He explains with a sad look on his face. I look at him with an expression somewhere between pity and sadness, not quite knowing what to say. I wish I had Arya's empathy. She wouldn't have been at a loss for words right now. My boss leans over his desk and says,
I'm putting you in charge of the surgery department.
I put my hand to my chest, trying to slow down my beating heart. Phil, I'm 27 years old. Half of my colleagues would gain up on me almost immediately. I warn him.
It would only be on a temporary basis. For a few months until we know if I'm coming back or not. In any case, your CV is excellent. You've trained with the best, both at your hospital in Boston and before that at Harvard.
My boss explains.
You work harder than anyone and put in more hours. I'm sure you should get the full-time position if I don't return because the board of directors respects you.
I don't know what to say, I admit, shifting my weight to my left foot and lowering my voice.
Just promise me one thing, Laura.
Phil interrupts before walking out the door and leaving his office.
In these 6 months, I've gotten to know you well, and your attitude towards your job reminds me of mine. You care more about your work than anything else in life, much more than you do about Martina.
Phil, I try to explain before my boss interrupts me.
Remember that your job is not your life. You are not your career path, and you are not this hospital. Nor do you owe your life to the patients, as crucial as they are to us. First and foremost, you are a person, a human being, and you will not live forever. Don't follow in my footsteps, Laura. We tend to think there will be more time to enjoy ourselves during vacations or when we retire. But life takes many turns. And now I am losing my wife.
Phil admits with tears in his eyes. I'll keep it in mind, I assure him. My former boss adds,
Laura, love matters. Family matters. Martina is a great girl. Keep her happy, or you'll regret it when she leaves.
Closing my eyes, I sigh deeply and remain still for a few moments as I watch his silhouette disappear down the hallway. I don't even dare to tell him that Martina is now history. She's gone forever from my life. Chapter 2
Girl, you'd better get some food in your body or you'll die,
Arya insists as I'm about to insert a coin into the coffee machine in the hallway. The morning has been as stressful as I can remember. Couple that with the fact that I haven't slept well, and I need to get a caffeine boost into my body as soon as possible.
Phil's sudden resignation has turned the department upside down, which means it's my job to deal with all the crap that's cropping up without a chance to give me a break. Arya, I just got out of a surgical procedure, and I have another one scheduled in an hour. Fuck, I don't have time to eat. Right now, caffeine is my number one priority, not food. I complain while I wait for the precious dark liquid to fall into a plastic cup.
If you starve to death in the operating room, it won't be good for anyone.
Arya pauses for a moment, and then looks up at me.
Especially not for me. I'll have to finish your surgery, little shit.
Besides, you swore to me that I'd be the godmother of your first child, so you can't die now,
jokes my friend.
Without giving me a chance to protest, Arya grabs my elbow hard and drags me to the elevator that leads to the second floor, where we have a small cafeteria for the hospital's staff. I don't even try to argue with her. A year older than me, Arya has an overly strong personality, but also a huge heart of gold. Deep down, we are very much alike. Both of our parents immigrated to the United States in search of better opportunities. In Arya's case, from India, and in mine, from South Korea. We were both born in the United States, but were raised in the competitiveness characteristic of parents who had immigrated from Asia. Always going out of their way to ensure that we would be successful, and that we would enjoy the lifestyle they never got to experience in their home countries. As we walk from the coffee machine to the elevator, we discuss the opportunity it might be for me to take over as chief of surgery, even if temporarily. Being the two youngest surgeons in the department, we always talk about improvements and changes that could make our hospital a better place to work. Arya also has some very original ideas, and they could be implemented with relatively little money. A different issue will be to overcome the reluctance of the older surgeons. They have become comfortable in their way of doing things, and see us as a threat. Already in the elevator to the second floor, I notice the typical smile on her face. A smile I've seen too many times, and one that almost always turns into tears on my shoulder later on.
"You met someone yesterday, didn't you?" I ask, eyebrows raised.
"Her name is Paula. I met her through a dating app," Arya answers. "We went for a drink together and then dinner at a Japanese restaurant."
"Great," I answer a little dryly. My friend arches her eyebrows.
"Then she stayed the night at my place," she says.
"I expected no less from you. You're a real heartbreaker," I joke, shaking my head.
"She's perfect,"
Arya says, her voice squeaking a little.
"She's a yoga instructor, and she's, well, flexible. Very flexible. You know what I mean?"
I think it's hard not to get an idea.
"Really, you don't need to give me any details. You can spare me," I add, putting a hand to my forehead. "But I'm not just interested in her for the sex. She's a brilliant woman. With our work, it's hard to find a partner who isn't intimidated by us. I can talk to her about anything. She's sensitive, funny, and beautiful. I think this time it could be the one," I interrupt, finishing the sentence for her as she glares at me.
"Fuck, you're such a jerk," Arya shouts, slamming her earbuds back into her ears.
"Just because you don't believe in love, you don't have to tear down other people's hopes."
"I'm sorry. It's just that I've been too stressed this morning," I apologize, caressing her right arm. "Anyways, it's not that I don't believe in love. It's just that I don't believe in your first night crushes because I know they'll hurt you later," I explain.
"You're such an idiot."
"It's just that Jill also looked like she would be the one. And Naomi. And Julia," I say, lowering my voice as I realize I'm hurting Aria.
Paula is...
different? I ask. I don't mean to disappoint you. I really don't, Aria. I just want the best for you. But I don't want you to get hurt. And you have a tendency to fall in love too easily. Maybe you should take things slow and see where the relationship goes. Don't give it your all the first week and be disappointed if it doesn't meet your expectations. At that moment, the elevator door opens, and we stop talking. At 28, Aria still has the hormones of a teenager and falls in love too quickly. The fact that she is a gorgeous, intelligent, funny woman and, on top of that, a doctor doesn't help. As soon as she goes out partying, which is whenever she can, she ends up with a new partner and is convinced that she will be the love of her life. I just hope one of these women turns out to be the one, and Aria settles down once and for all. It hurts me to see her suffer when her relationships go wrong, or when they become toxic. Some people are just unlucky in love, and Aria is one. When the elevator finally reaches the second floor, and we are about to head towards the small cafeteria, we pass an elegant woman with blonde hair in a ponytail. She immediately catches my attention.
Laura?
Professor, I didn't expect to see you here in this hospital. It's a pleasant surprise, I reply politely, unable to speak, as I come face to face with my former mentor at Harvard Medical School. Chapter 3. I shake my head slightly in surprise as I try to react to my former professor's presence in the hospital. Awkwardly, I squeeze Aria's arm to make a quick introduction. Dr. McKenna, this is Aria. I mean, Dr. Kumari. We work together as surgeons in this hospital. Aria, this is Dr. McKenna. Time seems to stop for a few moments, and I start to drift back to a time-long past. I go back to my classes with Dr. McKenna at Harvard Medical School, when I dreamed of becoming like her one day. Fortunately, Aria has good reflexes and lunges forward, putting her right hand in front of the elevator doors, preventing them from closing before we can get out. My eyes lock with Dr. McKenna's, and neither of us can move or react as we stare at each other.
Nice to meet you, Dr. Kumari. A pleasure to see you again, Laura. If you'll excuse me, I have an important meeting to attend, my former professor says, taking determined steps as she enters the elevator. When the elevator doors close, I let out a worried sigh, and my mind whirls endlessly. I'm concerned about what lies ahead. This is not the typical hospital where you might meet Daniela McKenna. We don't do anything special at the surgical level, and we are simply in a very different league to her. The only thing my hospital is known for is its oncology department, which is considered one of the best in the country. In any case, if Daniela McKenna is here and, according to her own words, has an important meeting, it can only mean one thing. Our scumbag medical director wants to replace Phil with a renowned surgeon. Hell, they haven't even given me a day to prove I can run the surgery area, and they're already looking for a replacement. For some time now, the board of directors has been trying to bring in renowned doctors to attract the attention of the press and potential investors. Daniela McKenna would certainly fit that profile perfectly. She is one of the most famous surgeons in the country, and her surgical techniques are studied in medical schools around the world.
Dr. McKenna? As in Daniela McKenna?
Aria asks, stopping abruptly. Yes, I answer dryly.
Daniela McKenna was your professor? As in the McKenna technique for heart transplants?
She asks again with a tight squeeze of my wrist. That's what I just said. My friend brings a hand to her forehead and pretends to be very disappointed.
Damn it! You've learned very little from her teaching,
she says sarcastically.
You're such an asshole, Arya, I reply, reaching for a banana from the fruit shelf and a bottle of orange juice.
She's hot. Did you have fantasies about her when she was your professor? Wait, you two didn't fuck, right? I'm just saying that because she looked at you a little strangely,
Arya says, as she swipes her credit card through the reader to pay for our lunch.
You're such an idiot. She was my mentor, and she never paid much attention to me. Besides, she's 15 or 20 years older than us.
Well, she could do anything to me right now in the break room,
Arya jokes, biting her lower lip and raising her eyebrows.
Did I tell you you're a slut?
My friend takes a bite of her apple and says,
Fuck, Daniela McKenna as a professor? That has to be awesome.
You know Dr. McKenna? A voice asks behind us.
We both turn in surprise, waving to our friend Sophia standing by the coffee machine.
You look exhausted, I exclaim as I notice her dark, baggy eyes and tired face. At the same time, I thank heaven that she allows me to steer the conversation away from the current topic. Sophia's heavy sigh answers for her better than a million words.
Things aren't going well in oncology? I ask, stroking her left arm.
Things rarely go well in oncology, generally speaking. Not for individual patients. I'm not sure I'll ever get used to this, especially when I see the children arrive,
admits Sophia, looking down at the ground as she pours coffee into a mug.
Do you want to have a drink and talk?
I was just coming to get this,
she says, pointing to her mug of black coffee.
We'll meet at lunchtime. I have a crucial meeting right now.
As I watch her silhouette disappear in the direction of the oncology ward, her words echo in my mind. Sophia is a very promising oncologist. She's just 32 years old, but she's already recognized as one of the best young doctors in her field. She loves her work as much as anyone, and she works her heart out on every case. Still, she has often told us how hard it is every time she loses a patient, or how sad it is to see kids with cancer.
I'm leaving too. I need to talk to Andrew, I exclaim abruptly, gulping down the last of my orange juice and tossing the bottle into a trash can to our right.
Why do you want to talk to the big boss?
Arya asks, surprised.
Because he's a son of a bitch.
I hope you're not going to tell him that. You'll be looking for a new place to work if you do. What's wrong with you?
Demands my friend. The fact that Dr. Daniela McKenna is in this hospital, I say aloud to myself, can only mean one thing. Andrew is trying to convince her to take charge of the surgical area. The board of directors is looking for a prestige doctor whose profile matches hers. They haven't given me a single fucking day to prove that I can take over Phil's position. They are a bunch of pigs, I complain, hitting the wall with the palm of my hand.
Can you relax?
That's completely impossible, my friend assures me. How could they pay her salary?
I don't know if you realize, but we're not at her level. Besides, do you think she'll leave her classes at Harvard to come work here in Los Angeles? To this small place? No way! She needs to work in a Boston center.
I'm going to talk to Andrew. With a little luck, I'll catch Daniela in his office, which will confirm my suspicions,
I add, as I insistently punch the call button of the elevator.
Arya holds her tongue, but she knows better than to argue with me.
She has seen my stubbornness when I get something in my head. It's not one of my best character traits. I run through the halls, taking long strides until I reach the hospital direct.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?